This is another Red FM podcast. And remember, if you enjoyed this episode, for more podcasts, check out redextra.ie. It's full of great Red FM content.
So joining me in the studio today is somebody that I came across actually through a friend of mine, and I was totally taken with her on social media alone. I know that the purpose of this podcast is to kind of, you know, present a more authentic side to social media, and I think she completely embodies it. I love her story. I got a beautiful feeling from the video that I found online of her whole family, and I was really, really excited about her joining us in studio today. So with me here today is Lorraine Spillane.
Good morning,
Lorraine.
Amor.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Lorraine, I found you online, as I was saying. Your story was really, really interesting, because I think since becoming a mum, the juggle, it's something we all talk about. And, you know, online you see perfect lives, you know, people swanning off on holidays and everything looking perfect. But behind it all, you don't see an awful lot of the reality of the everyday life. And that's not always perfect, and it can be very challenging. And there's such a huge change, I guess, when you become a mother. For you, you come from a hugely busy house. Like, even today when you arrived, you look so beautiful. I was like, how do you look like that with three boys? It's so funny. So before we get on to talk about the book that you're bringing out soon, tell us a little bit about your story, about before you became a mum.
Okay. Well, I suppose I met my wonderful husband, Kevin, in 2000, and we got married in 2004. And I met him at a wedding, and it was one of these real magical whirlwind romances. Besotted with him, he was besotted with me, and it was just like this picture perfect story. And
it's like when they say one wedding makes another.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh. And it was just, you know, a fabulous time in our lives. We both really excited about the future. And as I said, it was a real whirlwind romance. It just felt so right. Surprise engagement and all of this sort of thing. And it was just, you know, he really ticked all the boxes for me. So with this magical wedding and like that.
Where did you get married?
We got married in, I'm from Bishopstown originally. Okay. So we got married in Curraheen Church, and I at the time was working with Bank of Ireland Global Markets.
Okay.
And
were you based in Cork?
I was based in Cork. Okay. The office was in Dublin, but I started off my banking career down in Clonakilty in West Cork.
Oh, I love Clonakilty.
And absolutely, I adore Clonakilty, and it's so special for me, and I have such special memories because I met my one of my best friends, Grace, down there, and we shared a house. So I actually went back to Dunmore House in Clonakilty for our wedding reception, because it was just so meaningful for us.
It's such a beautiful location. Wow.
Absolutely. So we had a wonderful wedding, honeymoon, and then like that, starting off the next part of our life. And we had a few years where we were child free. So I suppose we just, like every other couple that's child free, you enjoy life. You're going away on holidays.
Oh, those days.
All those days. You're just, you know, your weekends are spent, you know, what are we going to do to the house? So we will go, you know, shopping for interior stuff for the house. And sure, look, we might as well.
Aren't your priorities so different?
Totally different. And you live in a bubble, and you can really understand how other mothers kind of like look at you and say, oh, God love them. They haven't a clue what's coming down the road.
And nobody can prepare you. It doesn't matter how many people say it to you. It's not until you're in the situation that you really go,
totally.
Oh, I get it now. It's different.
Totally. But the other side of it as well is I actually think it's kind of nice to be in that little space as well, and to kind of enjoy that little bubble, because, you know, it is part of life as well. And I suppose
totally.
It's an experience. And I suppose it's an opportunity as well that you can really get to know your partner, and I suppose grow together as a couple as well, which I suppose
Absolutely.
Is very meaningful.
It's a lovely phase. It really is. Like, I kind of think of everything as different phases. And it's a beautiful phase to be in when it is just the two of you. If you're lucky to have that time and get to travel or get to just have interests together.
Yes.
It's really lovely.
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely.
And then you were pregnant.
Then I was pregnant. And our first boy, Niall, he was born in January 2009. And it was like, again, you know, oh my God, this wonderful new arrival. And you kind of think yourself, you're the first person that's ever had a baby. And, you know, you don't want any advice from everybody because
You've
you know
this.
It all and all of this sort of thing. So again, you're kind of in another little phase. And it's quite exciting because,
yes.
you know, you've gone from a couple to now all of a sudden the house is, as you think, full with another person.
One,
and
little one. Smally.
Exactly. And I really, I can remember, I just really enjoyed my maternity leave. I loved being pregnant on all of my three
Did
boys.
You?
I absolutely loved. I just was one of these people that I loved
okay.
being pregnant.
It just suited you.
Suited me.
Did you have much sickness on them or anything?
No, funnily enough, on Harry, I always felt it was a little bit different. And okay. on reflection, I think that kind of is part of his uniqueness, which
okay,
I can
lovely.
Share with
okay.
you later. But I really enjoyed my maternity leave. And I think as well, it was the fact that I did have a very busy job at the time.
Okay.
As I mentioned, I was a treasury manager. It was quite demanding.
Okay.
So it was lovely to be able to kind of step out of that zone as well and just be at home and enjoy your
the
little
boys.
Baby and things like that. And I suppose then kind of, you know, you go, move into the phase, you go back to work and then you're pregnant again and another yeah. baby's born and all of that sort of thing. And I did think at one stage, I always was the type of person that I suppose I just hate a lot of chaos. And
okay.
chaos is there in life, whether you like it or not.
A certain amount of it we have to embrace.
Absolutely.
Or we'll go crazy. But organisation, I always feel it's like that feng shui thing of if the house is some way orderly, my mind is too, and
totally.
My mood is. And but it's to find the balance is quite hard, isn't it?
Totally. And I remember when Dara was born and going back to work, and I found it quite hard, you know, the juggle, you know, meetings up in Dublin, the early starts down in West Cork or North Cork, wherever you had to be.
And it's getting the babies out of bed in their PJs and in the dark in the winter.
Exactly.
It's hard, isn't it?
It is. It's hard. And I kind of felt to myself, and I would have said this to Kevin as well, you know, we probably need to make some adjustments at some point in time if we are to have some type of work-life balance. Mm. So it was always kind of at the back of my mind. So about a number of months after I went back to work after Dara, I kind of made inroads into looking at leaving my job, and
okay.
it worked out really, really well.
Okay.
And I suppose it gave me an opportunity as well to kind of just assess where we were in life and kind of take a step back and see what were the other options were. And I suppose when I was working, I was always hugely interested in people and how
okay.
some people had that very calm approach to life and they could really engage with people. And I was tended to be drawn to those type of people.
Okay.
And then there was other people and everything was a big hassle.
Go, go,
and everything
go.
Is frustrated. And, you know, you have a conversation with them and you'd nearly feel
the energy takes over almost. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You'd nearly be kind of at the end of your tether yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was fascinated with how people actually managed themselves. And I did a lot of...
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Very interesting, because we're in this kind of bubble of mindfulness for the last couple of years, which, you know, has had positive and negative press. But I think that's a great point. I was talking to somebody recently and we were having a discussion about the fact that it's your perspective,
totally.
You know. Obviously, we're wired in different ways as humans, but if you can change your perspective, sometimes you don't need to really change the situation you're in. It's just how you view it as
absolutely.
Well. And our internal voice to ourselves, which we have ingrained in us since we're children.
Totally.
Sometimes we need to change that a little bit as well.
Absolutely. And what has been a habit as a child tends to carry you through to your teenage years and into adulthood. So,
and we don't recognise it as that.
Exactly.
That it's conditioned thinking and behaviours that we can change
them. We have control over changing
wow.
them. Yeah, absolutely. So I spent a lot of time studying and researching emotional intelligence, and the plan was is that I would like to kind of, that was the career path I would possibly go down. And then I happened to fall pregnant with Harry.
Oh.
So that was like a real surprise, and it was a welcome surprise. And I was again delighted. And I was delighted that I had left my busy job, because I knew now, I said, right, okay,
you had the
we're
time.
In a different space
yes.
and all of that.
You had the brain space for a new human coming into your world.
Absolutely. And again,
were the boys excited at home?
The boys were really excited. Again, like that, they were saying, like, you know, Mom, is it going to be a boy or is it going to be a girl? And I said, I don't know, whatever we get, you know. And kind of that was kind of what they were anxious for. I think they were thinking, well, it'll be an extra boy to play football with, or are we going to have a girl that's going to mess up our things?
So
or,
it's going
you
to
know,
make everything
yeah,
pink in our bedrooms.
Exactly, you know. So was that level of excitement. And but to be fair to them, I suppose they were quite small at the time as well, you know. Niall was 5 and Dara had just turned 3, so they were still quite small. But it was a lovely time. So then Harry was born, and he made quite a dramatic entrance into the world
in comparison to
the other two boys. So I
was he early?
No, he was actually 4 days late. But
okay.
I walked into the CUMH at 6:30 after my husband driving at great speed
oh, good God.
Across the Link Road rush hour traffic. And I said I handed my file. I actually don't even know how I managed to walk into the hospital. But anyway, I walked in at 6:30 and Harry was born at 6:36.
What?
So he was born quite fast.
I have a friend who has a similar story, Sandra, and they literally, her memory is being chucked onto a bed and rushed through doors. And she was like, just give me the epidural. They were like, I don't think you understand, the baby's here.
So wow, he was born really, really fast, and he was absolutely gorgeous. And I remember, very different from my other two boys in the sense that he had these really navy blue eyes and these dark black eyelashes, and I'd never seen eyes like it. My other boys were quite fair, and and I just,
and you had very blue eyes as well.
Yes, but these were really like piercing, they were like navy, which they've now turned brown. But he was just, he was absolutely gorgeous, you know. And anyway, that was fine. They thought that in the hospital that he may have been a little bit stressed because of the speed of the birth. But there's absolutely no reason to be concerned, you know. It was just that, like, he was born fast, you know. I mean, he probably got a shock. I certainly got a shock.
Did, yeah.
So exactly. So he spent a few days in the neonatal, and that was fine. We were discharged from the hospital on the Friday, and I remember the day we were coming home, the consultant said to me, he said, you know, go away now and enjoy your new little baby and have a lovely life and all of that. And he said, I'm actually, just before you go, he said, I'm just going to send some samples off to Temple Street. He said, don't panic at all. He said, I certainly don't expect them to find anything wrong with this baby at all. He said, I'm really only erring on the side of caution because of the fact that he was born so fast.
Okay.
And his blood sugar was a little bit low when he was born.
Okay. And they're so thorough.
They're so thorough. So absolutely, I didn't think anything of it. And that was fine. Took him home. And on Monday, I was waiting for the public health nurse to arrive, and my phone rang, and I said, oh, I better answer that. It might be the public health nurse looking for directions. And I had a phone call from the consultant in the CUMH, and he said, Lorraine, he said, I'm really sorry. He said, I have to deliver this news to you. But he said, it appears as if Harry has this condition called tyrosinemia. And I went, okay. And he said, so we need you to come back to the hospital. He said, look, he said, I don't want you to panic. And he was actually very calm. Okay. So I was actually quite calm. I was kind of saying, okay. And he said to me, so I need you to come back to the hospital. And I said to myself, so when would you like me to come back? And in my own head, I was probably thinking, you know, in the next 2 or 3 weeks when things calm down. And he said, well, it's 4 o'clock now. He said, could you come here by 5? He said, don't feed Harry anything. Don't give him any more formula. And will you pack your bags as well? Because you'll be going to Temple Street. So there was kind of, I suppose, an element
all within the same day.
And in the same phone call, yeah.
All three boys with you at home?
I had all three boys at home.
Was Kevin at work?
My husband was there because he was off work, thankfully.
Okay.
And the public health nurse had arrived. So she'd arrived into this kind of scene of, right, okay, you know, huge emotion. So,
and were you on to Google straight away?
No, I wasn't. I couldn't even, you know, it was the fact that it was a name, kind of a condition I'd never heard of before. I could kind of like, even, what did he say it was called?
Okay.
I couldn't even remember.
You couldn't process anything.
And
yet.
I suppose the fact that he was so calm, and again like that, I suppose it's just me. I always have this kind of, you know, when something is thrown at me, I said, okay, we'll deal with this now. And I don't kind of jump into this kind of major meltdown panic type thing. I'm very optimistic, but I'm also realistic and practical. So that was fine. We got ourselves sorted and we went back to the CUMH, and there was an element of uncertainty. We didn't know what was happening. And I remember arriving in the CUMH and we were waiting for Harry to be transferred into the ambulance. And I remember one of the nurses saying to me, she said, you have a very exotic baby. And I said, what do you mean?
She exotic.
Said, oh, exotic. I said, what do you mean? And she said, you know, she said, in the history of this hospital, she said, we've never come across a case of tyrosinemia. And and I suppose it was then I kind of realised that, oh my God, it's rare. You know, this is kind of, it's unusual.
That the staff are actually interested in your baby because it's something that they haven't come across before.
So we went to Temple Street, and I'll never forget the journey to Temple Street. And you know, we arrived in Temple
Street.
Was
it just you and Harry in the ambulance, or did Kevin go with you?
No, what actually happened was they had advised us to travel behind the ambulance because they felt that it would be too emotional to leave one person drive
on
behind.
Their own.
Yeah.
Okay, good
they
point.
They felt, and I was a bit nervous. They said you could actually, after just having a baby and be in an ambulance then for that length of time, and we need to care for him and we don't want you to be any further upset and things like that. So I kind of took what they suggested, and I was glad I drove with Kevin because it would have actually been horrendous for him driving behind an ambulance
and
all the way to Dublin.
You're in there with
and knowing
Harry.
And not
being able to talk to
you. Yeah, exactly. So it was the right thing to do.
And good support. And it's a bit of couple time for you to get, you take a deep breath. And
absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So when we arrived in Temple Street, I'll never forget the day. The sun was just, it was just the brightest day, the clear blue sky in September. We arrived in Temple Street and literally they were waiting for him. They were waiting for him. And I was kind of going, my God, like, he really
it's
is.
It's like
kind
the
of,
Pope is arriving.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just kind
it's
of like
a member of the royal family is coming. I
just,
love it.
I couldn't.
He's so special.
Yeah, I was like, and I was kind of going, my God, they're waiting to meet him, you know, and all of this.
Was so, that reassuring for you in some way?
It was kind of mixed emotions because I was kind of going, oh my God, is this really serious? Or okay. is it a case of, oh my God, that, you know, it's they're looking to meet him because it's so unique. So anyway, what we discovered was is that Harry was the second case of tyrosinemia in the country.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow.
The first boy, I think, may have been about 9 or 10. And then, so this was like medical history starting all over again. The research was starting all over again. There was a baby, a new baby in the country with the condition. Medicine had moved on from 10 years. It is a case that's so rare. There's about 400 cases of it in Europe and 1,000 cases worldwide. So
just
it's really,
1,000
really,
on the globe.
Yes.
Wow.
So, and both parents have to carry this very rare gene. And I suppose they were fascinated with this as well. Two Corkonians living within a 5 mile radius
what
of each
other.
What are the chances you meet and you both have this rare gene? So I
That's
really
incredible.
Do believe like that things are meant to happen and they do happen for a reason. So we spent a number of weeks up in Temple Street. It was all very surreal. You know, he was under a really, really kind of strict feeding routine. His bloods were checked every hour and a half.
So part of this is that Harry is missing an
enzyme
to break down protein.
Okay. So basically, Harry can't eat meat, fish, chicken, eggs, dairy, and also the other products, which we know everything now has protein in it, you know, from a bag of crisps. So everything has to be kind of very monitored very closely.
Okay.
So he can't eat the foods that are very high in protein. So he gets his protein from a synthetic form of protein, which he drinks every day.
Okay.
The condition affects the brain, the liver and kidney. Thankfully, Harry is really, really healthy. He's
Thank
never
God.
Had any symptoms of the condition in the sense that it just has to be monitored so closely. And
okay.
he takes medication every morning and every evening. And that prevents damage to his brain, his liver and his kidney.
Wow.
And then his diet is really, really strict. In effect, it's a plant-based diet. It's a vegan diet, but again, without the protein. Now, we all know the importance of protein and how we need protein for to grow and develop and things like that.
So he synthetically gets
he
that.
He synthetically gets it, but he is allowed a very small amount of natural protein, which I basically I take a blood sample from him every week, and that's assessed by Temple Street, and that dictates his requirements for the week.
Wow.
So
and how is that transported and how?
Well, basically I get it from natural foods and things like that. So literally it's a case of me looking at all of the labels on foods, weighing, measuring, counting. So Harry is allowed 20 grams of protein in any one day. It can't be given to him altogether. It has to be spaced out over the course of the 24 hour period, or the, you know, the working day as such.
Okay.
And, you know, he knows that he has a special tummy. He knows that he's not allowed to have certain foods, and he's quite accepting of that. But in the initial stages when he was a baby, it was actually unbelievable because he had to be fed every 3 hours.
So this is through the night?
Through the night. Every 3 hours he had to be fed, and we had to make up 16 bottles a day for him.
Wow.
He had to have 2 bottles at each feed.
Was it a special formula?
So he had what he would get his natural protein from the likes of, say, regular SMA or baby infant formula. So
but only a certain...
A very certain amount.
Okay.
And you had to get that into him as well. So you had to make sure that... So literally for the first 18 months, we had to wake Harry every 3 months and we had to feed him 2 bottles. Every 3 hours.
Wow.
One was with his little natural protein and the other was his synthetic form of protein.
Okay.
And I had to record every single bottle that he drank and how much he drank.
I mean, you're tired as it is,
yeah.
as a mum, and with the two other boys as well,
totally.
With his brothers. Oh my goodness. So this was a big team effort at home, I can imagine.
Huge.
A big learning curve for you about
absolutely.
Food, about nutrition, about the body.
Totally.
Did you get very good support from Temple Street, you know, from a knowledge base? I mean, I would be completely clueless about this.
Yeah, Temple Street are absolutely, I have to say, until you actually experience the world of Temple Street, like we all hear the great work that hospitals do, but they are absolutely amazing and outstanding. So we have a fantastic medical team above in Temple Street, from Harry's consultant to all of the other doctors and nurses, and also the team of dietitians. So
okay.
I have a relationship with them that I speak to to them every single week.
Okay.
And
so you can pick the phone up if you're absolutely. Stuck or if he's, you know, like if Harry gets sick and, mm-hmm. you know, the way you crave different foods, has that been a challenge?
It's hard to describe Emer because he's actually unbelievable. He's so amazing. You know, he has made this so easy for me
wow.
in that he is so accepting of what he can and can't have. He's so brave in the sense that anytime he goes to hospital, he just puts out his hand, gives, you know, for the bloods. And anytime he has been sick, we like basically if Harry were to get a normal cough or cold or a gastro bug like any other child, we just let them go off their food and they'll be better in 24 hours. That wouldn't really happen with Harry. I would end up in the hospital locally
okay.
and he would end up on a drip or on fluids and
okay.
I would nurse him inside in the hospital then myself. Now, thankfully,
okay.
it hasn't happened too often because he's extremely healthy.
Wow.
And he's actually
okay.
amazing.
And I love, like, so for our listeners, if you can go on to lowproteinconnect.com, you will find the video. I mean, if you just Google Harry himself, it'll come up as well. But lowproteinconnect.com, take out your phones now if you're in the kitchen. If you're at work, have a quick look in the computer and you'll find the most heartwarming video of Lorraine and Kevin and the three boys, Harry included. And it gives a little bit of an insight into Harry's story. And what came across for me the most definitely was that, you know, you say in the video that you blended things in as parents to everyday life, which I thought it was kind of a beautiful way of maintaining as much normality as possible for all three of your sons, but also a great way to, I guess, destigmatize what Harry had and his illness. So I just thought it was a very loving thing for all three boys, but I can't imagine that that was an easy process or a seamless one for you as a family. So what are your biggest challenges at the moment as parents at home, just in your world with the three boys?
Well, I suppose like that, you know, what would be, I suppose, like, you know, a lot of people would say to me, oh, I suppose you've got very used to now going to Temple Street and you're used to managing Harry's condition. Of course, we're used to it. But I suppose what people would forget is we don't particularly like having to do it. Nobody likes to think that their child has a serious condition and things like that. But also it's the other two boys. We kind of tend to forget that, you know, every time we're used to managing Harry's condition, but, you know, they're looking at it and kind of, you know, Niall is now 10 and he says to me, Mom, it's really not fair that Harry has this condition. So that kind of presents another challenge that, you know, his little mind, he's worried about
he's
his brother.
He's processing this in another way and you have to manage that as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And boys being boys as well, they're still quite young, you know, and, you know, we're going out for a family day on a Saturday or a Sunday or something like that. And, you know, I'd say to them, look, this is the plan. We're going to go here and we're going to go for something to eat. And look, we're going to, you know, the way we have to make it work for Harry. So these are the things that you can't choose today. And to be fair, they're absolutely amazing. So they know that if, you know, we're going for a cup of coffee as a family, they know what places to suggest where Harry can pick something. Because it's all about being inclusive, really.
Okay.
And including everyone, you know. So there, I suppose, were the challenges. And I suppose the other challenge that I suppose I see with Harry at the moment is that he's just started school and he wants to be the same as everyone else. So he wants what's in his lunchbox to be
of
the
course.
Same as everyone else.
Okay.
So
okay.
it's allowing that and maybe using his little protein allowance to give him things that
in
are
school.
Similar,
okay.
like the cream crackers and the thing, you know, that he
okay.
can be similar to other kids around
so he
the,
doesn't
the table.
Feel
so
as
he doesn't
special
feel.
As he is, that he's... He still
Absolutely.
Feels that he's included and
Absolutely.
Inclusive.
But what he does find hard to understand is but Mommy, you allowed me to have that today or yesterday. So why can't I have it today? And I'd have to explain to him, because this is what you're going to have for dinner, or you've made a choice to have that. But to be fair, I mean, I've never in my life come across a child who will turn around and he'd say to you, that's fine, so Mommy, I'll just have some more cucumber instead.
He just understands.
He just understands.
And if you were to go over the allowance, does he himself feel sick immediately?
No, he doesn't feel sick immediately. What it would be is it would be a build up in his system. So basically
okay.
excess protein is like poison to him.
Okay.
And it would literally poison into his bloodstream and start to poison the liver and the kidneys and affect the brain. Now, if he had too much or too little, or if he was feeling sick or something like that, I would notice, like with his behaviour, he might be a little bit off.
Okay.
And things like that.
Okay.
So I suppose as a mother would notice kind of little differences with him, but he'd be absolutely, no, he wouldn't feel, he wouldn't feel anything physically. But if it was a regular thing over time, he would be
sick. That's
the
problem.
He would be sick.
And I find that, you know, again, another thing that came across in the video was just the, you know, the kind of happiness and the love in the house. You know, the fact that he's your third boy, he's surrounded by people who are going to mind him. You know,
yes.
He's just beaming in the video. It really came across to me how amazingly you have managed the whole situation and that you've all adapted. Everyone, as you said, from the boys to yourselves, everyone has adapted in their own way to find year normal and
yes.
to make it your version of, you know, what's normal for you as a family. And I think, again, it's incredible that you're doing that for the other boys as well, because you're raising great men, I think, you know, in how you even said they are considering Harry now, even at the age of 10, how Niall is considering,
yes.
you know, how it must be for him in different scenarios. So you're raising three incredible men there. You know, I think it's amazing, absolutely amazing what you're doing.
Thank you.
When did you decide to pen a book?
I remember I was at home one day and I remember saying to Kevin, this was now before, I suppose maybe about 6 months before that kind of the ideas had come for the book. But I kind of said to Kevin, do you know what? I said, I really feel I've lost my sparkle. And I said, I just, you know, have this constant heaviness, this anxiousness. And I knew what it was down to. I said, I really need to get my act together and accept that Harry has this condition.
Okay.
I said, it's here for life. I can't do anything about it. So I said, I really need to get my act together and accept it. I think there was part of me kind of saying that, you know, maybe they've got it wrong. It's not, you know, because he's okay. so healthy and he's so well.
Okay.
And I was kind of waiting for them to say, being the optimist that I am. But I said, I really need to be the optimist and be realistic now
okay.
with this. And kind of, you know, I had to have a good talk to myself and say, I really need to accept this. And I think things changed the minute I did accept it. And it was, you know, I just felt I was in a much better place to start coping with managing the condition.
Okay.
I was more positive and things like that.
How old was Harry at this stage?
I suppose he was maybe around 1.5.
Okay.
And I think
he's
the first year,
small.
He was still very small. You see, I think the first year was kind of consumed with us up and down to Temple Street. So we were again like that. You know, it was like Temple Street with a security blanket around us.
Okay.
And you were able to kind of, you know, go under their little
and you're
blanket.
Still learning
and you're still
so
learning.
Much.
And things like that. And I just kind of, but I do remember, and I think again like that, it was just, you know, the whole tiredness of the lack of sleep and all of these nighttime feeds. You know, you're delirious with the lack of sleep. You're waking up wondering, God, have I fed the child? I can't remember. Did I get up in the middle of the night? Did I miss an alarm?
Checking,
you know,
your notes
that
and
sort
everything.
Of thing, you know. And I just remember saying to Kevin, I said, I really need to get my act together. And when I, that was like the light bulb moment, I just said, right, okay, can't do anything about this. So we just need to embrace it. And I just found that it just put me into a different space. And then I kind of, I suppose, I really got into the whole thing of researching Harry's his diet. I didn't want to know too much about the condition because I think you can drive yourself demented, and I didn't want to kind of learn about other cases of tyrosinemia and where people were at, because I really believe that everybody is different
yes.
and how you approach
and
things is totally
in his,
absolutely
yeah.
and he was doing extremely well. But I did start researching, you know, food and his diet and things like that. And I'd constantly be pottering away in the kitchen,
okay.
you know, coming up with kind of recipes for him. And is there anything that we could replicate as a family meal and all of this sort
okay.
of thing. And
where you
and
could build it in for yeah. everyone else and not be cooking separate for him. So.
Absolutely. And then I suppose, you know, I was writing all of these things down and thinking about them. And I said, maybe I'll do something for Harry. And then I said, you know, maybe I'll do something for Temple Street. And I still wasn't really sure. And I remember then Kevin, who's absolutely fantastic, as I say in the book, he's always so supportive of all my dreams and notions.
Oh.
Because he really is, like, you know, I kind of get these ideas and he just says, yeah, whatever, look, you know, and he'd support me all the way. And he said to me one day, he said, look, he said, are you going to do something? And I said, maybe I will, maybe I won't. And then I kind of said to myself, do you know what? I said, it really, I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Okay.
But I was kind of saying, what? And then I kind of was saying to myself, but what is it that I'm trying to achieve? I said, I want to do something for Temple Street. I want to do something for Harry. And I said, but I really think I want to help other mothers as well.
Okay.
And he said to me, why don't you just start doing something with all that thought, all that, the ideas that you have in your head.
To get them out
jotting them
paper.
Down,
okay.
started jotting them down, and they could be, you know, all sorts of ideas and weird and wonderful things and positive thoughts and inspirational quotes and just little lifestyle tips that work for me, because I was finding that, you know, while I am a real mum, I didn't want to portray an image that I am a super mum by any manner or means, because that's not what it is about at all. But I wanted to kind of give a message out to any mother that was finding things hard, that was finding things challenging, and that, you know, if there was another mother that was embracing a challenge similar to me, that, you know, well, you know, you can live your best life possible and you can embrace whatever life throws at you. But what I did find was is that by looking after myself first, it put me in a better place to, I suppose, manage myself. And then when I was able to manage myself, I was able to kind of manage the kids and everything else.
There's a saying that a friend of ours has, that if the captain of the ship goes down, the ship's going to sink. So, you know, the, you really do need to look after yourself first. But we're not, I think as mums, we're not really, as women, not only mothers, I think we kind of look after everyone else around us. We make sure everything else is okay and then we're okay. Mm-hmm. But it's the reverse. We have to be okay ourselves first. And it's okay to not be okay, you know, that whole side of things as well. But I think unless we can find a little tiny window for ourselves, be it in every day or every week, and that can look different to everyone.
Absolutely.
But once you can kind of acknowledge that, you know, these are my 10 minutes in this 24-hour day where I'm just going to do something, be it read a book or do a bit of yoga or sit outside with a cup of tea and take a deep breath, you know.
That's what it is, really.
It's just because you can lose yourself. And I can't imagine what it was like for you, because you're trying to process everything. Mm-hmm. You're a go, 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 up and down to Dublin, and you are mum to three boys. So life is very busy. You're a wife, you know, you've an awful lot to kind of to manage. So looking after yourself is priority, but we're not great at doing that. I wonder why that is.
And sometimes, and you really kind of summed it up there, Eimear, when you were saying that it looks different for everybody. And I think for me, it was, you know, just understanding really what makes me tick as a person and what's important to me, and eliminating what's not important to me.
And not feeling guilty about that.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know, is it, you know, how we're raised, but we tend to do things that other people would say, well, God, fair play to her now. She's doing that and she's doing very well for herself. And but are you living your own true life, or are you living it for what? You think other people will think she's doing a great job there now for herself. You know, it's funny that, you know, we're almost afraid to kind of get rid of things that are maybe not serving us so great.
Absolutely. And I'm a firm believer in that everything should have meaning and purpose.
Okay.
And, you know, and I think that, you know, we've embraced a real simple life since Harry was born. Now, I mean, to a degree, we would have been like that anyway. But I think it really, Harry really...
Do you think he changed your perspective?
Oh, totally.
That's lovely.
Totally. You
that's
know?
A real, that's a gift.
Yeah, it is. And I must say I enjoy it, because I have this huge sense of contentment.
Okay.
And I feel so happy. I feel so blessed for what we have. But I also feel so grateful for everything.
Okay.
And I'm so grateful for Harry. And I actually wouldn't change the fact that he has this condition, because he was literally a gift that was sent to us. And I really believe that he was that special gift sent to us to show us how to lead a really simple,
meaningful life.
Meaningful, uncomplicated life that's full of happiness, gratitude and kindness. And it's literally about, you know, I suppose, managing what you can control, and, you know, don't worry about what you can't control.
I really think that is that not the essence of life? If
Absolutely.
We can take away all the layers, the worries, like what really matters at the end of the day. And it's the people around us. It's not the things. It's the relationships we have. You know, if you look at the blue zone in the world where people live the longest, it's the connections with people that they have, and the purpose, the sense of purpose in their lives.
Absolutely. And it's that, as you mentioned earlier as well, it's that human connection is so important, and it's so lacking in today's world. And it's really about, you know, just going back to basics and doing the simple things and having meaningful conversations with people. And, you know, there are simple things that we love. And it's funny, actually, my 8-year-old Dara, and he's a real character, you know, but, you know, he kind of turned around to me there recently, and they love sitting around the dining table, and they love when there's food involved on a Sunday morning. If it's brunch, mummy, will you do brunch? And I'll say, we will, of course. And I suppose, like, my idea of it is that, well, look, we get to spend a little bit more time in the house and we're not under pressure, and they enjoy this big, you know, brunch or whatever it is.
It's like,
you
a
know,
party for them.
It's like a party for them. And he turned around and he said to me one day, not so long ago, and he said, isn't this lovely, Mum? You know, we're just kind of all sitting around and chatting and there's good food as well. And, you know, you could see the genuine excitement that, you know, he was enjoying, you know, and this is what I'm kind of saying. Well, look, you know what? If you can kind of teach these things to your children.
That's just so lovely.
It's just what it is really
so lovely.
About.
And isn't that, as a mum now, all you want is your family around you as well and for them to be content and happy and sharing time together. We spend so much of our lives running from A to B and from activities to school to play dates to everything. We're just on the go all the time and we kind of devalue staying at home.
And sometimes the small things are more meaningful. And the one thing I always say about, you know, and I mention it in my book as well, you know, as I said, you know, modern life is very, very busy and we can kind of feel like a hamster on a wheel going
yes,
around and around and around. And the minute you open your front door in the morning, that is what happens because life is hectic out there. But it's about making that mindful approach to that day. And, you know, some days I don't mind. I love that chaos. I make that choice that I want that chaos.
Today's
that
my crazy day.
Yeah, that I want that chaos today and I want to get involved in that chaos. But then there are days that I'm actually saying, no, I actually don't want that chaos. And I choose how I approach the day. But I think as well, you know, our home is the one place where we can actually escape to, where we can't let that madness creep in.
Yes.
And we kind of sometimes don't give it the respect that it deserves.
Absolutely. Because we're focusing on other things.
Yeah.
And I even find with the internet now, I would have been very bad for sitting and scrolling and mindless scrolling through, you know, different social media sites. And I found it very hard to stop doing that. But I just felt with the kids, this guilt that I could be baking with Erin or I could be just sitting down and watching something or reading a book with Quinn. And it became part of my life. The phone became too much of a part of my life. And I just had to put it down and train myself to pick up a book instead or, you know, get down on the floor with the kids myself. And I'm nearly embarrassed to say it was hard to do. It was hard to get out of the habit. Just sitting on the couch with a cup of tea and my phone. I mean, that's not, as you said, it's about approaching with meaning what you do. And I was, you know, it got rid of a lot of the mum guilt for me that on the days that I was at home, I had less guilt because I was participating in my day with my children and participating in my own day for myself and doing things other than just sitting on my phone and picking up my phone when the kids were trying to play with me or talk to me or during making a meal, you know, I would just leave it and forget about it, put it upstairs and nobody died in the process.
Absolutely.
You know, nothing changed, only my approach to the day. So there's so many little things we can do.
Yeah. And sometimes it's about defining your boundaries as well, because like that, we're very quick to put rules and boundaries in place for our children, but we kind of forget about our own personal boundaries.
That's a great point.
It really is.
Great point.
And it's again, you know, I
think as Irish people, we don't have boundaries.
That's it.
We don't have any.
But things are a lot different when you do have boundaries. When you identify what your boundaries are, things are very, very different.
And I think we struggle. Like I find if I'm trying to establish boundaries in my life, is it an Irish thing? It's a guilt around, God, if I do that now, will they think I'm being rude?
Or yes.
It's almost like you're apologising before you put the boundary into action.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It's actually a learning curve as well, and it's a habit to be broken because it's again like that. It comes back to being comfortable with saying no.
Yes.
And when you say no, it allows you to say yes to something else.
Yes.
And I always think about things that I don't feel guilty if I have to say no, if it's something that's going to take from my time and energy, if it's something that I can't do with the boys, I have to choose carefully what,
yes,
you know.
And imagine a week where you don't really do many things where you set out to do it with the kids or yourself and you're saying, I have to do this now, they're at 4 o'clock, or I have to go there at 2 o'clock, or I have to do this now with the kids. That it's actually something you're saying, oh, I'm really looking forward to this now because
yes,
I said no to that. I can do
absolutely
this lovely thing instead.
Absolutely.
That I'm excited about. And like, yeah, life is for living. It
totally
really is. So tell me, you have lots of tips in the book.
So I have lots of tips in the book. And again, as I said, I suppose I you know, wrote this with the busy mum in mind, but certainly not to portray the image that I'm a super mum by any stretch, because I'm not. This is literally me sharing my tips about what works for me with managing three boys, one who has a serious medical condition and a lot of juggling and things like that. And I suppose, you know, there were a few different things that people would have said to me, you know, people may have approached me in the past and said, I never knew you had a child that had a serious condition. You don't look like somebody that... And I think what they were trying to say to me was...
They thought you'd be dishevelled and...
Well, then, you know, that, you know, I'm, you know, I I know I have a positive attitude towards yes. life. And that's something that I've grown up with as a child. My mother has been like that since we've kids. So like I had that okay. good base to start from. But I think it was kind of, you know, like that, that I wasn't kind of giving that, you know, away or whatever. But so basically, I wanted to be able to just share the tips that worked for me. And again, you know, there's some very simple things that I was saying. My mantra is very, very simple. Only worry about what you can control. Don't worry about what you can't control. Live in the present. It's very yes. important to live in the present.
And I always find these tips seem so obvious when you read them or when somebody says them. But, you know, we don't. We're on breakneck speed through life. Yeah. And sometimes it's just stopping
yeah.
and just, you know, reading this and saying, oh, yeah, that's actually simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
Applying it to my life is yeah. a little bit harder.
Absolutely. And it's kind of about breaking things down as well, you know, one thing at a time, instead of getting overwhelmed with all of these things that are coming at you. But just kind of, and I very much live in the present. It's one day at a time for me. And I suppose it's even like, you know, Emer, you know, I was up in Temple Street yesterday with yeah. Harry.
Until late last night.
Yeah. So then it was a case of, OK, well, now I can say yes to this morning because I knew I was coming back from Temple Street. And I suppose that's how I live my life then. It's kind Brilliant. Of one step at a time. And it's very much living in the present. But
you know, when you do show up, you show up 110%.
Then. Yes.
And that's the great thing. Like I've often been on days on the treadmill where I've shown up and I've not been present. And I love that point that you make about just live in the now.
Yeah, just live in the now. And, you know, it's fine to reflect on the past, but don't dwell on it. Only dwell on the happy memories.
Okay, because you can't change that.
You can't change it.
It's completely futile.
It's absolutely. And then again, you know, don't worry about the future because it hasn't even happened. You know, just really.
We're terrible for that. We're trying to paint a picture of something that hasn't happened. And that's what worry is. Worry is something about the future that hasn't happened yet. I mean,
totally.
When you say it out loud, it seems ridiculous. That
absolutely.
You would spend any energy, any day on it, yeah. on worry.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even though, as I said, this book is for the busy mom, there are a lot of things as well in here that, you know, you can take and pass on to your children as well. You know, I speak about, you know, defining your own personal boundaries. We're very quick to find them for our children, but, you know, it's defining our own personal boundaries. You know, one for me, again, like that is I make a point that the first thing I reach for in the morning is the kettle. I will not reach for my phone. I have the most important people
yeah,
with
like
me.
That.
I have the most important people with me, so I don't need to check my phone until after they've gone to school. And it's just these simple kind of things.
That's so lovely. I'm totally going to implement that now myself.
Do you know what's great? Is you're not allowing a distraction come at you at that hour of the morning because you pick up your phone, there's stuff coming at you, there's
yes.
information coming at you, and your brain is going into overdrive already and you haven't even...
And you've read emails about something yeah. that really isn't
irrelevant
at that hour of the morning.
Absolutely. So just, you know, reach for the
kettle
before you reach for your phone. Celebrating your success every day. I'm a firm believer in that. You know, we achieve so much every day, but we don't recognise it because we actually don't acknowledge it. And it's
That's
so important.
Fantastic.
And, you know, I make my boys write down in the book that we have in the hall, something that made them proud every day.
Stop.
Or that they're
I'm doing this.
Yes.
So you have it in just a notebook, is
just
it?
Just a notebook, and it's Create Your Own
idea.
Rainbow is on the front of the book, and it literally is something that, you know,
that they're proud of doing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's gas. It just becomes a good habit again like that. And it was so funny, you know, even Niall was writing into it the other day about, you know, he had been picked for a football match in school. And he was so excited about it. And then he wrote after it and he said, and my mum's book is coming out. You know, he was like, he's
happy
I'm so,
for you.
But he was writing that he was so proud of me. And I thought that was actually lovely because I was kind of going, oh, my God, it's
lovely
to hear that your child is actually proud of you because we're always the ones telling them, you know, that we're proud
yeah.
of them. So, you know, I speak a good bit about that in the book.
That's such a lovely idea. I'm definitely going to do that because we've spoken in other episodes about how we have so many to-do lists and
yes.
you never get your to-do list done and they bring you down the next day when you see. I didn't tackle anything on that list
yeah.
from the day before. So we changed it to ta-da lists
yeah.
of what did I do today that actually I didn't think I'd set out to do and I did it. And
yeah.
even if it's only one thing, even if the children are still alive at bedtime and
yeah.
that's all you've managed, you're still winning.
Absolutely.
You've done really well.
And like, again, you know, sometimes like that success to me is that, OK, everybody got to school. We managed the chaos of the traffic. Everybody's
yes.
fed. And you know what? I'm at home now and I'm having a cup of tea with my husband.
Yes.
So like that's success
that's so
in
lovely.
Itself. But everybody's definition of success is different.
It's different, sure.
And, you know, but it's just recognizing what success is for you. And I share, you know, just very simple tips that I have, healthy habits. One chapter that I really enjoyed writing was the one on resilience and optimism. And Even like that now, my boys have contributed their own artwork to the book. Yes,
so it's
very much a family collaboration. And Dara drew the most beautiful rainbow for me for resilience and optimism.
Oh, look, that is absolutely beautiful.
And he is, and it's so appropriate because he actually is a very resilient character and he's an optimistic character. He can be feisty, but he's very, very resilient. And when I'm talking about resilience as well, you know, it's important, I think, to build resilience in children from a young age. And, you know, sometimes people will say, but how could you build resilience in children from a young age? And so, you know, we do a very simple thing. And it kind of like the boys motivate me. I'd often say to the boys, I'm doing a sugar-free challenge for the next 2 weeks. Would any of you like to join me?
Mine would run out the front door and say, help, my mother's gone mad if I suggested that.
And Dara is always the one that will put his hand up and say, I'm in. Now, can I choose where we're going to go out for dinner if we do it? And I love that about him. But he's thinking about what the end result is going to be.
Brilliant.
And, you know, I suppose what they're learning from it is because he'd often come in, you know, maybe it might be school or something. He said, you know what? He said, all I was thinking of was a piece of chocolate. I love a piece of chocolate, but I knew I couldn't have it and I couldn't let you down and all of this. And did you have anything while I was at school? I really badly want the piece of chocolate. But you know what? It's teaching him that, you know, well, you know what? I can't always have what I want in life and things always don't go my way.
Yes.
And it's just making him a little bit tougher.
And we were raised with that as well, you know, and it does give you a bit of grounding as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, the book, tell me about the proceeds as well. You've done something very, very kind with them.
All of the profits are being donated to Temple Street Children's Hospital, which I'm so delighted with. And they will be specifically allocated to the unit and the ward that look after Harry. Oh,
that is absolutely brilliant. And that really is what drew me when a friend of mine told me about you. It's what drew me to find you on social media, because I just, you know, you hear so many things. I that evening, actually, if I'm to be honest, I had read something about an influencer who had put up a bad review for not getting something free online. And it just kind of made me roll my eyes. And then 10 minutes later, I was talking to a friend about you and she had told me about your book. And I just thought, there's for all the negative, there's always more positive. And I just thought it was such a lovely idea that you would put the time and energy into doing that. But having spoken to you now and sat down with you, I can see that it's almost like it's almost a therapy for you as well to put the book together.
Yes.
And it's going to help other mums.
Yes.
Like, you know, I can't wait to read it. And even from talking to you, have you done counselling before? Have you ever studied psychology or anything like that?
What I did study was when I left Bank of Ireland, I retrained as a life coach. Didn't get the opportunity to practice, but I did a huge amount of study around emotional intelligence.
Because I literally feel like I've had a counselling session with you now. I've like all these ideas and little notes I've taken. I knew it because your whole aura, you've got a lovely aura. And
thank you.
It came across. I had to ask you that now because I was saying she must have, you've a great understanding of kind of the basics about how to strip it back to find, you know, we look for happiness in external things, but it's kind of an inside job.
Absolutely.
And I think you have a very good understanding of that.
And I think as well, and I mentioned it in the book, sometimes we're constantly searching for this perfect world. But when you stop searching, you realise that you actually have
a
perfect
you.
World right in front of your eyes. It's just being grateful for what you have.
I leave you with the story that after I had Erin, she had very bad colic, and just from stress and not coping very well with it, I ended up in hospital with what they thought was a tummy ulcer at the time. Thankfully it wasn't, but I was in for 5 days and I felt really helpless not being at home helping Timmy with her. And it was kind of a bit of a reflection time for me, but he had come to visit with her and I couldn't wait to see her, and she was only one at the time, and she got very upset when I was in the bed and she didn't want to even hug me or let me kiss her or anything. And when she left, I pulled the curtain and I had a bit of a boo-hoo for myself, like a bit of a cry. I was saying, God, here I am now. I should be at home there. And, you know, just always my mind racing, never kind of stopping and taking a deep breath. And this lady from across the bed in the ward came over to me. She was in her 80s. She's from Glanmire. I can't remember her name, but she gave me a holy medal and she sat down next to the bed. And I wouldn't be very religious anymore. I'd be spiritual, but not religious. And I kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, a prayer now from St. Anthony or whoever is not what I need right now. And she was saying, you know, here's a prayer for you to say tonight. And I know you probably don't want to speak to anyone now, but I just wanted to say to you, I saw your husband come in and I saw the way your daughter was and everything and how much you wanted to kind of hold her and give her a hug. And I really just wanted to come over to say to you, I have two boys, they're grown, they're married, they have grown children themselves. And I wished, looking at you, that I could be in your position. These are the best days of your life. And I saw me and you, I saw when I was at your stage with my smallies, I thought, you know, they weren't easy. Every generation has their own challenges. But she said, I look back now and I realise they were the best days of my life. And she said, you are in the best days of your life. And she told me stories then. She never sees one of her sons from one end of the year to the other. She has only met the grandchildren on that side once. And it just broke my heart. Mm. It was the game changer for me that this is it. Like, these are the good times.
Absolutely.
And the kids are around us and we're growing our families. And these are the good times. Like, and, you know, we're lucky to have grandparents around and family and friends and, you know, there's nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong.
And that's why it's so important just to live in the moment.
Totally.
You know, and take each day as it comes.
Totally. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. I feel like we could sit here for another hour.
Yeah.
So the book is called Mum on the Run. It's going to be out in the coming months. So we will follow you on social media. So what platforms are you on, Lorraine?
I'm on Instagram. You will find me under Spillane_Lorraine and you'll see Harry's Mum on the Run.
Brilliant. So. Harry's Mum on the Run on Instagram. Please drop by and have a look. And again, go to lowproteinconnect.com because you'll really get a lovely feel for Lorraine and the whole family through the little video that they have up on that website. It's absolutely gorgeous. You used words on the video and on different things I saw online in the way you speak about Harry, words like magic, like saying he's a source of wonder. I nearly have tears now, but I just think, you know, you speak about him being a gift and an inspiration and so unique. But I would say the same about Gia's parents and about his brothers, about Niall and Dara. Like, I think you're the same to him. And I think, you know, your approach and your view to the family as a unit, it's almost like this was meant to be.
Absolutely.
I don't think you realised when you were sitting in the Bank of Ireland all those years ago with your engagement ring on going, I just met a guy at a wedding and now we're engaged and I'm planning my wedding. I don't think you realised you'd be sitting here with your book about your beautiful family and all these lovely tips that so many other people will benefit from. So it's just a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Our podcast is all about. And I always feel if only one person listens to this now and goes away and gets the book, you know, when it's out and that, this is it. It's the real connections with people and using social media for social good, and you are the absolute epitome of it. So.
Oh, thank you, Emer. I was so delighted to be here and to share the story. Thank you so much.
I think
much.
We'll have to have you on again. I think when the book is out, come back to us again and we might do something, or maybe we might do a little event or something. It would be lovely to meet Harry and everything. So keep in touch. And for everyone listening, you can again follow Lorraine at Harry's Mum on the Run on Instagram, and we will share on the Life Hustle pages when the book is out as well, just so that people can go and support it. Thank you for joining us and best of luck.
Thank you, Emer. You're very welcome.
So you can see all of our other episodes at redextra.ie. Thank you to Killian Pettit, as always, on production, and to all of our family here at Red FM for housing our little project.
Thanks for listening to this Red FM podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and check out redextra.ie for more great Red FM content.